This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, glad you could be with us here on SB Nation AM. We got a lot to get to in this hour. Coming up, Dave Dusek will join us from Golf Week magazine. Senior writer there. We're going to talk to him about what we saw over the weekend from the British Open. That's coming up in about 35 minutes. And also whether or not Jim Furyk, who's the Ryder Cup captain, you should seriously consider putting Woods on the team. He's been non-committal, and that's okay. You don't need to make public comments about who you're going to pick for your Ryder Cup team. Now, you can make that come out later. Maybe Jim Furyk, absolutely, without a doubt, is going to have Tiger Woods on his team. Maybe he wants to, you know, think it over. Maybe he wants to see a little more. I think it's hard. I think it would be hard to say no to Tiger Woods. I think choose somebody else over Tiger Woods, because Tiger's never been a good, when he was at his peak, he was never a great Ryder Cup player. And a lot of it had to do with his individuality. He didn't do well in team concepts. There was a famous disaster pairing that Hal Sutton did for Team USA back in 2004 at Oakland Hills in Michigan. We paired up Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. And at the time, people thought, oh, that's great. He's got the two best players in the world, and they're going to be on the same team. And it was a disaster. They didn't get along. Phil said that they played two different style of balls. So in four ball and best ball, it was very hard to play alternate shot. But the reality was there was no chemistry between the two. Tiger just didn't lend himself to do that. Individually, he would do well. Team play, he was hard to pair up with. But over the last couple of years, he's been really good about the Ryder Cup. He's been really good embracing what the Ryder Cup is. And everyone to a man will tell you that at Hazeltine, he was absolutely essential as an assistant captain. He wasn't a playing captain. He was an assistant captain. And him being able to fire up the guys and help with the pairings and do all of that stuff and be part of the strategy that the United States used to win the Ryder Cup was instrumental in them doing that. So I think if you get a Tiger Woods that plays well, and he'll play well at Firestone, he'll probably more than likely play well at Belrive for the PGA Championship next month. Don't know how he'll do in those tournaments, but I think he should be on the Ryder Cup team. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about the NFL and one other sort of overall issue that the NFL is going to have to deal with. Came to a head yesterday. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up as well. 800-777-2907 on SB Nation AM.
To SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you can be with us on SB Nation AM. All right, Mike Florio writes at Pro Football Talk today, an article, it's kind of a column, if you will. The title of it is the NFL softening its stance on its substance abuse policy. There's two stories that are kind of attached to it. One, Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon is not going to report to camp. He's kind of pulling himself out. There's comments that he has not failed anything. He's not messed up. He's going to get help. It's sort of a mature way that it's being presented, that he's looking at himself and he's trying to get himself some help from this addiction that he has. And the other one that has kind of been brought up is Randy Gregory has been fully reinstated by the NFL. And if you know the Randy Gregory story, he has had trouble with marijuana. He uses it recreationally. He uses it because he says he has social anxiety. It has really cost him a good chunk of his NFL playing time since he's gotten into the league. He could have been a first round pick. He tested for positive in marijuana at the combine. Josh Gordon is addicted to the same kind of thing. So it was something that we talked about with the Randy Gregory story last week, and I'm glad that Mike Florio is kind of bringing it up, because I ask the same question, which is where the league is going with this. And if the league is looking at marijuana the way we as a society are starting to kind of look at it, I know there's always going to be the hardcore believe it's a gateway, don't like the legalization of it, don't like where society is heading with it. Yeah, I get that. But for the most part, more and more states are looking at this differently, and medical people are looking at it differently. And we're starting to see maybe there's more to this than what we were, you know, what we kind of grew up with. Right. And if that's the case, where is the league going? last week I kind of threw out some ideas, and I don't know if they're plausible or whatnot. And my idea was, look, there's hard stuff that the league should be testing for. There's certainly performance-enhancing drugs that the league should be testing for. If a player goes in and tests positive, and the only thing he tests positive for is marijuana, no suspension. Don't bring it up. Let him just live in wherever he lives, and let it just be. He deals with the local authorities on that. If they make a big deal out of it, then the NFL may step in and say, okay, it's a game suspension for being kind of breaking the law in your area. I don't know if that's plausible either, because there's going to be players who are going to live in places where it is legal, and there's going to be players who are not. I don't know what the NFL is going to do here, but it is interesting when you think about what we were. I mean, it wasn't really that long ago that somebody like Randy Gregory was called an idiot and stupid, and how could you throw this career away? Is it so important you can't just stop? To where we're starting to see that there is not so much an addiction from the product, but an addiction to how the product makes you feel and makes it better for you to do certain things, right? If you have social anxiety, you may not be physically addicted to marijuana in terms of its chemical and in your body and needing that chemical, but you might be addicted psychologically to the fact that you hate the fact that you're societally anxious, and this helps you in that regard. It also is a pain reliever for a lot of these athletes. I'm really glad Mike Florio brought it up, because I think it's an issue that's going to come to fruition over the next couple of years when the NFL has to figure out what it wants to do. Because the NFL it's not at a crossroads. I don't want to make it sound like it's that severe, but it's going to seem very, very old and archaic if it continues to hold on to the belief that if you are testing positive for marijuana, you should lose 25% of your season. If that's the case, if that's the stand there, the hill they're going to stand on, it's going to make them look bad in a world where it seems like everything the NFL does is already making them look bad. They can't seem to handle things correctly, right? From the Ray Rice situation a number of years ago to the way this Anthem thing is just, they're not communicating it very well. If they start, they're selling this tough policy to a society that is saying, we're kind of past that. And the NFL doesn't want to be perceived as telling a fan base that one of its better players can't play for four games because of that nasty marijuana. And we're making sure we crack down on the nasty marijuana, when the public itself is saying, wait a minute, we're not buying that anymore. We're not as upset about that as you are. So the main reason you don't want your players to take marijuana, which isn't performance enhancing, actually helps relieve some of the recovery time, helps in the recovery time. So it's not a steroid that makes you stronger and all that other stuff. It's marijuana. We're deciding as a society, we're a little bit more okay with this than we were 5 years ago. You're standing on a hill suspending our guys for four games because of it. You're going to end up looking bad. Like, you're not reading the way society is going. And I think that's where the NFL has to sort of keep this in mind. They can easily say, we're not going to be as hard on this as we have in the past, because 10 years ago, we were 10 years ago, we get it. But now more and more states are looking at this seriously in terms of legalization. A lot of it is for tax revenue, but a lot of it is, you know, did we really need to be so harsh in this in the first place? Some argue yes, some argue no. I'm in the no camp. I think times are changing. The NFL needs to change with it. But it's an interesting conversation that people are going to start having about where this league is. Because Randy Gregory, for example, has lost some really serious time. He could be a really good player for Dallas. He could be a player they absolutely need. But he's fought this. People are saying Josh Gordon has worked his tail off, and that this is a very mature thing that he's doing to recognize he's not quite ready yet. He needs to go get himself fixed before he does report to camp. He's got his teammates backing. Before... Think about where we would be with a Josh Gordon or a Randy Gregory not that long ago in terms of the conversation. We'd be throwing them under the bus, irresponsible. I feel anyway that there seems to be a new look on this. Because there's a new look on this, maybe the NFL does need to change. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. One thing I'm glad that is not going to change, and I know I brought this up in the last hour, how we on the social media train get on this anger crusade where we love being angry. We want revenge. We want people to pay for their mistakes. And so we're willing to use social media to make sure that they do pay for those mistakes. Sometimes it's irrational. Sometimes it's over the top. But sometimes I feel like it's right on the money. In the case of Art Briles, I feel like it's right on the money. The former Baylor coach who ignored a lot of reports that his players were committing sexual assault and violence against women and ignored those for the sake of his team and games and wins, can't get a job anywhere. Can't get a job anywhere. Couldn't get a job in the CFL. The league actually had to prevent him from getting an offensive coordinator job with one, I think it was Edmonton, that wanted to hire him. Texas Tech has thought about bringing him in. Another school has thought about bringing him in as a coordinator. Both were shot down. He's trying to get back in the business. He's not getting back in the business, except he may have a job with an American football organization out in Italy. He might have to go to Italy for this, to build back his career. He's only 62 years old. I'm sure he wants to continue coaching. And maybe he could go into retirement, but I'm sure it's still in his blood. But it's going to be a really long time before anybody, at least in the college game, feels safe enough to bring Art Briles on board. Because you can't sell that at all in 2018, 2019. I don't even think 4 or 5 years from now. I don't think you can sell Art Briles coming to your school.
No, wasn't he offered a job in Canada? And then, he did. Then they retracted it.
Yeah, not only did they retract it, but the league stepped in and said, no, you can't hire him. The team was going to hire him, and the league said you couldn't hire him. He can't get a job anywhere.
Yeah, Italy.
Yeah, maybe Italy.
Yeah, and maybe he'll be one of the first head coaches when China gets up there, China NFL or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, that's where he's headed. He's kind of heading down that road, right?
Yeah, there's no way he could ever coach here again.
No way. At least he's got to realize in the college game, he needs a lot of time, and even time won't cure it because you can't sell it. You cannot tell. Because here's the deal. Football's big, but it's not it. Football's big, I get it, but it's not so big that you need Art Briles. All right? I'll give you a perfect example that happened right here in the state I live in. Do you remember when Greg Schiano got hired by the Tennessee Volunteers?
Yes.
And people lost their minds. And there was a vocal group on social media that went way, way overboard on Greg Schiano because of his association with Penn State. Now, nothing was proven that he either knew about it or hid anything or covered up anything. He was just associated with being on Joe Paterno's staff at Penn State. And they couldn't pin him to anything. And he was a really good coach. He got Rutgers national attention, for crying out loud. He was a good college coach. And Tennessee, there was a group of people that wanted to hire him. He was available. He did a great job at Ohio State. He wanted to get back into the head coaching ranks. Tennessee had a head coaching opportunity. They hired him. People found out he was attached to Penn State and somehow associated Penn State, not the scandal, but just the school under Paterno's watch. People lost their minds and Tennessee backtracked on it because they would not be able to withstand the amount of pressure that seemed to be building every single day with the hire. So football is a big deal, but there's so many good assistants out there. There are so many coaches out there, young guys that will give you everything they have, who have good football minds, or are trained by good people that recruit really, really well. You are not desperate, so desperate to take Art Briles. There is no program in America that is so desperate for a football coach that coached once at a Power 5 conference that they would take Art Briles and sell him to the co-eds and the mothers and fathers of the co-eds at that particular institution. Oh, yeah. He may have, ignored sexual assault and rape by his players. But, man, we're really excited to get that extra 2 wins this season that he's going to give us. You can't sell it. You cannot sell Art Briles. In Italy, they don't know who he is. But you can't sell Art Briles in America. He's got to know that. And plus, let's say we give it 5 years and it calms down. Who's going to want a 67-year-old coach when there's young, up-and-coming coordinators that are taking the sport by storm? You know how Lincoln Riley is? I think Lincoln Riley is 18, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's still young enough not to drink. No, seriously, Lincoln Riley's like 33 or 34 years old. There's a lot of good young talent out there. And you don't need some old-fashioned coach that's got caught up in this awful scandal, no matter what his record was at Baylor. Can't sell Art Briles. You can sell them in Italy, apparently. 800-777-2907. Hit me up on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, and that's Ron with 2 N's on SB Nation AM.
This is Over the Night with Matt Harrop.
Sorry, I'm a little bit distracted here, Bobby Beats. This girl I'm seeing.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Did you know that the Red Sox are 40 games above 500 right now? They're 71-31. They're on pace to win 113 games. Realize that?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Golly. What a night. That town, that area is so baseball crazy. Every single night they get to sit back and watch the Red Sox just pummel opponents. It must be like when, like last year with Houston, like just watching the Astros every single night. Even so much this year. Just, it's incredible what they've done. Red Sox are incredible.
Yeah, but absolutely, I think with the Astros, they've lost the most, like, one run games or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
They've lost more games by one run than have won. It was a weird thing. They can't win the close ones.
Yeah, that's true. They got a good series coming up with the Rockies. The Rockies are hot. They've won 7 of their last 8, I think. And they got this kid, Tyler Anderson, on the mound, who's given up like 3 runs in 4 starts. So it should be a good game tonight in Denver between the Astros and the Rockies. But the Red Sox are just flying. All right, so I was flipping through the channel, the guide on my television. I was looking for something to watch. I stumbled on this show on TLC called Dr. Pimple Popper. Now, you told me, so I told you that. I said, have you ever heard of this show? And you were like, oh, no, I know all about this show. So what? I didn't watch it. I kind of heard about it, and I saw a promo for it. I didn't watch it. What did I miss? Did I miss anything good? Should I be watching this program?
I think everyone needs to watch it once.
One time, that's it?
One time, because that's all you're really going to be able to see. You may not even get through a full episode. The episodes are an hour long. My wife.
An hour?
An hour. Because it's not just one patient. She's usually, there's like 2 or 3 that she's dealing with.
Oh, okay.
And my wife, we saw the ad, and she got all excited to see. She's like, oh, my God. You know, it's like, I've heard about this lady. I've followed her on Twitter or on Facebook or something like that, and I've seen her videos on YouTube, and I just knew they were going to make a show out of her. Basically what it is, she very, very attractive doctor.
Yeah, she's very attractive.
And...
I thought she was an actress at first.
No. She was
like that
maybe
pretty.
She might go that route. It worked out well for, what's his name, Ken Jeong?
Yeah, that's right.
Worked out great for him. Basically what she does is people come in and they have like these deformities. It's the best way for me to describe it.
Yeah, she's not dealing with regular acne. She's dealing with like gigantic pimples.
And they really are gigantic pimples. I mean, sometimes like this one guy came in, he kept getting this big old mass on his shoulder, and he would drain it, and then it would be another mass. And she stuck this needle in there. I mean, and this syringe she had to just go like to a local veterinarian and say, I need some large syringes and, the gigantic needles. And she drained this thing. I don't remember how many liters it was, because she was doing it in liters, and I'm not about the metric system. But there was like 40 or 50 of these vials. And I'm not talking, they're not small. That's not like that normal tiny little shot. I'm talking, these are big syringes. And there was like 40 or 50 of them to completely drain. It was almost like, I want to say like he had like 3 gallons of fluid sitting on his back that he always covered up with a sweatshirt.
Oh my gosh.
Or there was a guy who came in, he had gigantic ones on his forehead, or... There was a girl, she literally looked like a hunchback.
Because she had a big pimple on her back?
Yeah, but it's not like a pimple.
Right, does she cure this, or do people just keep going back and just get it drained?
No, what she does is she tries to figure out what the root of the problem is. Like with the guy she had to drain, she did a CT scan, found out what the root of the problem was, and he was, it cut the ending there, but letting him know, like, hey, we found out what it is. We're going to find you the top surgeon. And she's based here in Houston, too.
No kidding.
But
does she and Dr. Now from 600 Pound Life get together and hang out?
Probably.
Right?
But the one that got me, that just put me over the edge, is that she was taking care of this, I can't remember if it was a guy or a girl. I think I literally might have blacked out. Because she is you know, it's a guy, I think it was a guy, has a gigantic pimple. And you don't just, you know, squeeze your fingers and pop it. You get a scalpel, cut it open. You know, she first, like, she numbs the area. She puts, you know, anesthesia in that area just to numb it. These patients are awake, though. And she takes a syringe, she cuts it open. And the consistency inside, the only way she could perfectly describe it is like, oh, it's, you know, it's kind of like mashed potatoes.
Oh, God, that's gross.
And literally was just, after she cut him open, was just squeezing this mashed potato substance out of this pimple.
How great is this?
The pimple was literally, I want to say, like the size of his fist.
How great is that?
Oh, dude, no, it is disgusting.
Oh, but the fact that she does this and makes a living out of it, not only that, turns it into a TV show. God bless America.
Yeah, but then see, the worst part was like after she was draining the mashed potatoes, then she gets to like root of it or a problem of it. She's like, oh, we got a stiffy in here. And she pulls it out, and it literally is like this gigantic clump of hard, looks like clay.
Oh,
like this
God.
Guy just has a hard clay mass that has been sitting on his back for God knows how long.
So she had like 2 billion views on YouTube for this, because apparently she'll give you free treatment if you agree to let her videotape it and put it on YouTube. So she became a social media star.
Yeah.
And then it became turned into a television show.
Today's show's really been all about social media.
That's right. It's crazy. You're right. And you're 100% right. It used to be that you needed to be able to perform in the entertainment world, right? Like you were, but now you don't need to. If you can just get some videos and have people like the videos and watch the videos, they'll turn you into something. I mean, they'll figure out how to make you into is something larger than life.
Yeah, I think this one, I mean, it was a combination. It was a rare combination where she's a doctor, so she's knowledgeable, but she's very personable. She's very entertaining. She's not, you know, just a boring doctor who couldn't carry a show or anything. And she's dealing with such a strange area in medicine.
I didn't know this was a thing.
I didn't either.
Until I saw the ad for the show. I didn't know this was a thing.
One of the things they do get into is the psyche of the patient. You know, this lady who had a hunchback, she's always worn sweatshirts. She has been dating a guy for over 3 years. I want to say even close to 5 years. And she has never taken his shirt off. She had never taken her shirt off in front of him.
Because she knows that he'll see the hunchback.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's got to be debilitating.
But they do have, she said, we have had a physical relationship. But she has never taken her shirt off in front of him. Now, she was a little heavy. So she probably played into that, you know, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't skinny at all. He was heavy. I think he was heavier than her. But she had never taken her shirt off. He had never seen her without her shirt off at some point or another, like, you know, mistakenly walk in the bathroom, she's in the shower type of thing or anything like that. Then it took her all the courage in the world to say, hey, let me show you, because she always wore hoodies. And she lives in Houston.
Well, let me tell you, we're all, you and I, on the cutting edge of what's popular on television. Apparently that show is going to do well. People like it for a while. 600 Pound Life is still popular, isn't it?
Yeah, I've seen that from time to time. I can't really get into it. I feel bad for the ones who don't take it seriously. Or I don't feel bad for them. I get angry. Like, you know, this doctor's giving you a ticket, and the problem isn't just a thyroid problem.
How many times, though, in this show, do they have to film somebody who gets told, I need you to lose 50 pounds by the time I see you, and then they go to like a fried chicken buffet and go, I'll start tomorrow. And then they go back and they gain like 60 pounds. Yeah. This happens to every single one of these people, every episode.
And they always come in going, it's like, I don't know. I've been trying really hard.
I think I'm lost weight. And then they say, oh, I think Dr. Now's going to be mad at me. I didn't lose the weight. Like, not only did you not lose the 50 pounds, you're back to the weight you had before you even started this program, because you went to the buffet 6 nights a week. And that's what always baffles me. Almost every one of them is doing that. Every one of them. All right, we'll talk some golf with Dave Dusek next from Golf Week. I am Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a lot of people watched the British Open over the weekend because Tiger Woods was in contention, and that's what he does. He moves the needle. Unlike any other athlete, I mean, it's really amazing the influence he still has over the watchability of the sport, right? Golf will always have its fans. They'll always have the people that will watch no matter what. It's what you can do to get those outside fans interested in your product. And nothing seems to work other than if Tiger Woods is in contention or not. He took the sport. He vaulted it to another level back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, like I said, I said this yesterday. Golf courses were being built around the country. I mean, there was a huge interest in the game. Nike got into the product. I mean, it was everywhere. It was a good time to be a golfer. I played golf and I loved it because it felt like there was a new course being built all the time. When I was in Colorado, I was going to new course openings on a daily. I had a golf show and it was new course openings all the time. And it felt like it was a good time for the sport. But like any bubble, it bursts. And it bursted not only because Tiger, but there was real estate issues and all that. But Tiger disappearing from the game allowed a new group of golfers to emerge. Here, what was noticeable about the British Open is that as exciting as it is to get Tiger back into the golf forefront, to get it back in our conscious so we watch him and want him to do well, there is a group of golfers that are not afraid to go play one-on-one with Tiger. So the intimidation factor is not there. That doesn't mean Tiger can't win, of course. You don't need to intimidate everybody in order to win. When you just play better. You just get the better score. And Tiger is capable of doing that. It was a little disheartening for me to see on Sunday, for example, that once he got the lead, he couldn't keep the lead. Right? He hit it into the rough. On 11, he made a bad choice to try to hit the flop shot. He needed to take the bunker out of play. He missed the shot. It was an inch away. We went through a lot of hyperbole during the broadcast. This feels like 86 with Jack Nicklaus. And Dan Hicks said, is this like 2000 at Pebble Beach? It wasn't like either one of those. Because Tiger wasn't pulling away from the field. I remember when Tiger Woods, he would be in majors where he'd be out of it. Like, he just didn't have a good week, even though he was the most dominant player in the game. And he'd be like six shots back at the U.S. Open. I remember this at Shinnecock in 2004. He wasn't playing particularly well, not really into it, but they had him like at 10. And he hit a good shot, not a great shot, but he had a good shot. And they were trying so badly to get the viewing audience to stay with them. They were like, well, if there's ever a guy that can make a run, it's this guy. Nobody was making birdies. And they were trying so bad to sell you that Tiger Woods could make a run at this. That Tiger Woods could still be in play. Because they knew if Tiger Woods wasn't in play, it was hard to keep the audience. So I understood a little bit of, oh, if Tiger rolls that in, I got that. We still wanted it, but we don't have that. We do not have that from him. What we have is a guy that's got good game right now. It's going to make some mistakes. He made mistakes and couldn't recover from them. He couldn't get back into that after losing three strokes, a double bogey at 11 and a bogey on 12. He couldn't get it back. He got a birdie at 14, but everyone was putting up birdies there. But he couldn't take that next step. Can he take that next step? Can he get back to a little bit where when Tiger's in contention, he's really in contention? He's not just floating around, maybe he'll win, maybe he won't. We don't know. Maybe he'll make bogey, maybe he'll make birdie. Because that we get with everybody. We have yet to see the Tiger that says, no, this tournament is mine. And I've got it, and I'm gonna take it with me. Now I said earlier that Jim Furyk is still deciding whether or not, or at least publicly stating, he's still, wavering or deciding on Tiger Woods being a Ryder Cup pick. Now, maybe Jim Furyk knows exactly that he's gonna pick Tiger Woods to be in the Ryder Cup. It's all likelihood that he will. But this is kind of a new way we're going to see Tiger play competitive golf. Where a Jordan Spieth is going to be able to play with him and not be afraid of the moment. Rory McIlroy, same thing. Justin Thomas or Dustin Johnson or, anyone. Justin Rose or any of these guys. Jason Day. They're going to be able to play with Tiger and not be afraid of that moment. When you talk to guys back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Hey, Phil Mickelson one time said it. You realize there was a level of play that they realized, okay, I got to get to that level. If that's the way it's going to be around here, I got to get to that level. So I don't know how to do that. I'm going to have to talk to my coaches, but I've got to get to that point. I got to learn to hit shots like him. I got to learn to score like him. I got to learn to be able to score when I don't hit the ball well. I mean, Tiger one time famously, I think it was the 97 Masters, where he talked about winning the tournament without his A game. And that's what everybody else was looking for. Because everyone was looking for, okay, if I play my best, I'm still not winning this tournament. Because his best is still greater than my best, but his B game is still better than my best. So I at least have to get my best to be near his best and hope he has his C game. Because if I can do that, then I'll win. But if he plays well, I can play my best, I'm not going to win because I can't score like this. So what happened was where guys got to that level, there was a young group that knew that from day one when they picked up a golf club, that that's the way the golf world was. They didn't know any different. The Patrick Reeds and the Jordan Spieths and all these guys, Rory McIlroy's who grew up watching Tiger, they grew up knowing if you're going to win the Masters, it's double digits under par. If you're going to go to the British Open, you got to hit these shots. You got to be able to scramble this way, and you got to be able to putt this way, and all, concentration has to be through the roof, everything. And that's what they got. And that's why you have kids on the tour today. When they play with Tiger Woods, he's 41, he's still Tiger, he's still their hero, but they're not afraid of him. And here's the thing. They're never going to be afraid of him. Those days are gone. They're never going to be afraid of him. Jordan Spieth, who has won three majors by the time he's 25. He's not even 25 years old. He's already got three majors. He blew a Masters by getting an 8 on the par 3 12. He was tied for the lead going into this British Open. Could have won the PGA in 2015 for his third major of the year if Jason Day didn't play lights out. He could have won the British Open that year too. Had a chance to tie and get into the playoff on the 18th hole on the Monday when they wrapped it up. All of those things Jordan Spieth has accomplished. Do you think Jordan Spieth is ever going to be intimidated by a 41, 42, 43-year-old Tiger Woods? It's never going to happen. Tiger Woods is never going to outdrive Dustin Johnson. Rory McIlroy, same way. The Tiger intimidation is gone. So when we look at Tiger's career now, going forward, this is why I think the Ringer called it his third act, and I liked that a lot. I thought that was a great way to put it, kind of a third act. This is going to be a different way Tiger Woods wins golf tournaments. This is going to be a different way that Tiger Woods is going to get some success. I think he's going to win a major or two down the line. I don't think he catches Jack. I think the competition is too strong. I don't think he used to win majors by showing up and just willing himself to win it. He's not going to do that anymore. But I think he's going to get a couple. But it's not going to be the way we remember. He is going to make mistakes. He's going to have to overcome mistakes. And that's why I'm looking forward to where this guy is going to go. Phil has always been Phil, right? He wins, he loses, then he goes through these droughts. He's competitive, all of this. But the reality of it is Tiger disappeared. Tiger disappeared, and we never thought we would see him again. And if we did, we were really nervous as to what kind of Tiger we were going to see. And the Tiger that came back the last time was not fit to be on a golf course. The Tiger we're getting now has a good chance of winning tournaments. And it is fun to see. It's just different. It's going to be different. So I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I can't talk about anybody else like this other than Tiger. I'm not going to come on here and break down the game of Justin Thomas. I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to Jordan Spieth the same way. There's a large conversation about Jordan Spieth that people should be having about his inability to win that. But that's not really the story. It could be the story if we wanted to make it, but it's not really the story. The story out of the British Open was Tiger, because Tiger dictates everything when he's in contention. That's just the world we live in. Because he's more influential in his sport than anybody else is. LeBron in the NBA? Nope. Look at Tom Brady in the NFL or anybody else in the NFL. Nope. The shield is always going to be bigger than its players. Nobody in the NHL. Right? I mean, in international soccer, you have a couple of superstars. But Tiger Woods, whether he's good or bad, plays well, doesn't play well, out of the game or in the game, moves the needle better than anybody, better than them all. And just look at the ratings on Sunday and find out. That was good golf that was played by the other golfers. Nobody was tuning in to watch that. Nobody was tuning in to see Justin Rose get in at 6 under par. Everyone wanted to know, what's the guy in red going to do? Because that's who we came to see. 800-777-2907. Tony D, Ron Culver, and SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, glad you'd be with us here on SB Nation AM. Ron Culver alongside. Ron, I still can't get over this daily news story. I don't know. It's not that I'm shook up over it, because layoffs in media has happened for a long time. But the daily news in New York, I know there's more to the story because of the company that owns them and all that stuff, and I'm not versed enough, but God, that's sad. I used to go to my grandmother and my grandfather lived in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn, and we'd go visit, and they always had a daily news in the house. And I loved reading it because I never got to read a New York newspaper before. I never got to read the New York sports section before, unless I would go to my grandmother's house when I was a kid, as a child, and it was always the daily news. And now there's going to be 9 sports writers trying to cover that scene. It's crazy. What did newspaper do wrong? I mean, I know there's more to this story than just that, but they didn't really embrace the internet as quick as other media.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And you allowed other platforms to kind of jump in there. Plus now, I mean, now you have, everything's more about blogging. And so then you have these sports blogging sites, which basically, you know, slowly over time, like our sister company, SB Nation.
Yeah.
Started off as just a bunch of bloggers writing about teams in their local area. And now there's bona fide news.
And there's power there. There's a powerful network of writers who are just doing great work.
Yeah, and literally just concentrate on their own team. Now you have a couple national writers that do national writing things, but I mean it's just like what newspapers used to have, where you just have a couple beat writers who cover that team. Yeah, a handful of them maybe they can do national or talk national because you would need one on staff. But I don't know. It is a sad area. It's just. Print is dead.
Yeah, I think the other thing, it's how the business model works, and I'm sure there'll be people to argue against this, but when the internet was, when they realized, okay, we're going to have to start having online, we're going to have to start putting our content online, they initially gave it away for free. And the problem is when you give something away for free, it's very, very hard to get people to pay for it later, even when you're appealing to their good sense, right? Keep journalism alive, you should pay for this website. Some people just go, nah, no, I'm not going to pay for it. Because it's funny, because even when you price it at, well, you used to get the newspaper delivered to your house at this, you can get it online for less than that and just pay this. And people still said, nah, I don't want to do that.
I know, but it's just a shit. I mean, no one reads the paper at all.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you walk into like any little grocery store, like, you know, a bit, not grocery store, but I say gas station, because they always have the racks right there. That rack is always full.
It's always full. And you're right. I remember when I was in journalism school, we used to talk about at the University of New Hampshire, my journalism professor one time made the example of like, okay, here's the Boston Globe. Here's the Boston Herald. What's the difference between the two papers? And you'd look at him and you try to find content, but he would say, look at the way it's designed. The Boston Herald is designed for somebody on a train, right? It is designed for somebody who's in transit. It's everything is in their hands. There's no sections. It's all together. There's the Boston Globe. It's designed to be read at your dinner table in the morning when you're having your cup of coffee. You pull out the sports section. You pull out the life section, right? Little things like that I noticed. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like that, I never thought of it that way, right? The transportability of the Herald or the more in-depth, fuller Boston Globe. And those are like working class guys or guys who are just at their house, reading it in the morning with their morning cup of coffee, those kind of dynamics. And those were things I always found fascinating. And now we're moving into an age where that doesn't matter anymore, right? We're getting our news differently. We're getting our news from different sources. This news about the daily news should not be that surprising, but yet it's still a little shocking. Because sports is important, right? I mean, it's fun and games, but it's important fun and games. We need that in our lives. We need sports in our lives. I tell people all the time who don't have a favorite sports team or follow sports, you need to tell me where you get your emotional ups and downs that don't involve life and death. Like, do movies do that to you? Does art do that to you? And if it does, tell me how it does. Because when I watch my team in the postseason and I'm on the edge of my seat, thinking this is the most important thing in the world, knowing it isn't the most important thing in the world, it's a very cool feeling. So is it books? Is it movies? Is it art? What is it, music? What is it in your life that gives you that same roller coaster that I get through sports? Because I like having it. Because when my real life, juggling family and bills and work and everything else, is roller coaster enough, I want a roller coaster that's fun to ride, that gives me those highs and lows. So when the Daily News is cutting down the sports section, it really is going to limit people's information that they really do need. They don't need it like they need medicine. They don't need it like they need food. But recreation is important, and people take this stuff seriously. They want to know what the Giants are thinking about with that number two pick in March, and they need a reporter to tell them what they're hearing. They're getting it from different sources, but they may not be getting it as good from the Daily News. It's kind of sad. SB Nation AM.